This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. An analysis of the 2018 midterm elections finds considerable continuity in the voting patterns of several key religious groups. White evangelical, born-again Christians backed Republican candidates about the same rate they did in 2014. Religiously unaffiliated voters and Jewish voters once again backed Democratic candidates by a large margin. But exit polls are showing a shift in Catholic voting patterns compared to other recent midterm elections. This year, Catholic voters were evenly split between the parties. This comes as there's a call to action for Catholics to join the social justice movement. Can a Catholic be a peacemaker and a troublemaker at the same time? How does this fit with traditional Catholic doctrine? And what are the issues that drive this movement? You can call in as we have our conversation. I want you to join it. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Zach Johnson, Executive Director of the Call to Action, the largest church reform organization in the United States. Heidi Schlumpf is with us. She's a national correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. Tricia Bruce is a sociologist of religion at Maryville College and a research associate professor of sociology at the University of Texas at San Antonio, author of Parish and Place, Making Room for Diversity in the American Catholic Church. And also with us in the studio is Karina Valera, and she is a member of the Call to Action's 2030 cohort for young leaders. Welcome both y'all. It's great to have you here this afternoon. Zach, what is Call to Action?
Well, Call to Action started, we're about 40 years old. It started as a conference. So our history is really tied with the conference, which we're actually holding this weekend here in San Antonio. That's our founding charism, is to hold this conference. And out of the conference grew a sort of larger organization with chapters across the country. There's probably 25 active chapters right now. There's been as many as 35 at different points. And the chapters are really locally focused, and then they regather once a year, or in these days twice, or every other year now, for this big national conference again.
So when you say it's a call to action, what kind of action are you looking for?
Well, there's five major focus areas the call to action focuses on. Women's justice. So a lot of times that gets interpreted strictly as women's ordination in the Catholic Church, which we advocate for, but it's much broader than that. It includes reproductive rights for Catholics. There's LGBTQ justice in the Catholic Church, and we partner a lot with organizations like Dignity and New Ways. Racial justice is a big area for us and has been kind of growing over the past 10 years. Church worker justice, which got its start actually here in Texas in the Rio Grande Valley. We can talk more about that later. And then lay engagement or lay justice. So how do lay people have and gain power in the Catholic Church? Those are sort of our core areas.
Is there a lot of debate within the group about what each of those things means and how what action is appropriate and needs to take place?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of discussion, mostly around, I'd say, like a tactical level. Should we start with a focus on transforming those issues inside the Catholic Church, or should we look beyond the Catholic Church and hope that the Church follows us because the Church should follow the laity and it is the laity? That's the main dividing line that I see and that we kind of experience. And there's a lot of healthy tension around that within Call to Action.
And Heidi Schlumpf, national correspondent for the National Catholic Worker, how big a deal is the Call to Action?
The Call to Action conference is a big deal. Here at the National Catholic Reporter, we've covered it for decades, and I'm excited to be attending and also to be speaking at it this weekend. The issues, both internal and external, are really important to our readers and to the many more progressive or social justice Catholics who are out there, many of whom are sometimes struggling with their connection to the institutional church. So not everyone who identifies as a social justice Catholic is necessarily a practicing Catholic or connected to the institutional church, in part because there's been quite a bit of tension over the decades between the rise of the more traditional conservative leadership in the church.
And so let me go to Karina. You're one of the young cohorts of leaders in the call to action. Where do you see, why are you involved?
So I have attended, or I've been Catholic all of my life. And as I've gotten older, I've noticed that I'm one of the only people left in my age group that is still involved at church. And kind of wanting to be this positive, progressive change and shift within my church, but I don't really have anybody standing with me. So I wanted to connect to a larger community and maybe push change that way. And serve my community, really, but at the same time connected with my church, with my faith, with my community.
So do you, your contemporaries of your age group, about what age are you?
We're from probably 20 to 20s.
And 20s. Is there a level of frustration that they want to see action in the world, trying to make the world a better place? And that they that it's not just people thought the power of prayer is a real thing and all these other are good and righteous and deserve to exist, but also people want to see actual behavioral change in the world.
Yes, so there's about 11 of us from different places all over the country, and we all center around a issue that affects us and our local communities. So mine is mental health in the church, the stigmas of mental health in the church, and how it affects young people, specifically in my community, my hometown, kids from 14 to 19, specifically males. And the rates of suicide and drug abuse and things like that. So my project is specifically targeted to focus on that social issue.
And you're trying to, say that again, what you're trying to do?
Combat this like social stigma to ask for help within the church surrounding mental health.
But traditionally there's a great role for a church minister to play in helping people find social programs that will help them with mental health issues, right?
Yes. However, we're a very large community and there's not a lot of, it's easy for somebody to drop off within the community, to lose
their connectivity.
Yes.
With the church.
To check in. Okay. There's like one person to check in to, which is our deacon who runs these kinds of, or talks to these individuals, but he's one person in like maybe 2,000 people.
Right. And so do you see having a strong church organization group that is deeply involved in a community can have a positive effect in dealing with issues of mental health and drug abuse and all these other things that are rupturing our society, that all this should work together in a holistic way?
Yes.
All right. Okay, we're going to talk more about that, a call to action to bring our society into a more just light, social justice. How does that appeal to you? Are you a Catholic that has sort of fallen off, stopped going to Mass? When was the last time you got into confession? You don't got to tell us, but, you know, how about taking action? Would that bring you back into the church? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We'll get to callers when we come back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about Catholic social justice today with the call to action conference happening in San Antonio this weekend, November 9th through the 11th. Is this something that people who aren't necessarily involved with the call to action, there are events that they can go check out?
Yeah, there's walk-in events. We have starting tomorrow. We have pre-conference sessions that'll deal with the border, issues on the borders. We've got a panel of folks from Karina's home area.
In the McAllen area.
In the McAllen area. Who are going to be talking about their work there. There's sort of a coalition that's built, and there's a panel. There's somebody coming from the Midwest who's going to be talking about deconstructing the kind of ways that the Catholic Church is connected to empire building and American exceptionalism. So there's all kinds of different issues that are connected to church that people could come and they could walk into, and that's just starting tomorrow. And then Saturday is where the real happens, and Heidi's talking on Saturday.
Oh, fantastic. Let's get some callers on the air, 210-614-8980. Sister Elizabeth is on the line. Sister Elizabeth, always great to talk to you, and you're on the air.
Good morning, David. Thanks very much for the topic. It's very timely. I just want to welcome to San Antonio these involved Catholics who are struggling to bring the teachings of the church down to earth, literally. I think that these areas are, it's a wide spectrum, first of all, and we embrace social justice. I think it's important to point out that the church has, for over 100 years, had very specific teachings calling all Catholics to be aware of social justice and to get involved in the world. But there are some topics in which the teachings of the church come into conflict with people's personal consciences. Some of these people, of course, are not Catholics. Others are Catholics. And I think there's a lot of confusion around, for example, the principle of freedom of conscience, as Father John Courtney Murray described it in the last document of the Second Vatican Council, and also what's the basis of the Catholic conscience and the authority of the bishops to teach as the magisterium of the church. So I'll just toss it out there and see how kind of stew we can come up with here.
I also want to comment that, Sister Elizabeth, you're bringing forth very interesting ideas that are very deep and philosophical, but you are also someone who is very involved in the physical world. You minister to prisoners. You have worked in the Eagle Ford Shale area, helping to people negotiate the changes that are coming to their communities. And so you have been a force in our community.
Oh, well, thank you. And yeah, it's my baptismal call, so I'll have to account for God to whether or not I live up to it.
All right, Sister Elizabeth, thank you so much. I appreciate you calling. Let me go over to Tricia Bruce. She's a sociologist of religion, professor at Maryville College, research associate professor of sociology at UT Austin. So can you react, Tricia, to what Sister Elizabeth was telling us?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, Catholicism, of course, has a rich history of Catholic social teaching and social justice. But if you look at American Catholics in particular, they also have a rich history of balancing that tension, or what might even be called dissent, with Catholic teaching. You know, you asked at the outset of this program about Catholics balancing being both peacemakers and troublemakers, and it turns out that they actually do that quite a bit even within their own tradition. So, for example, more than three-quarters of Catholics say that the church should allow birth control. Nearly as many say the church should allow priests to marry. 7 in 10 say that women should be priests. Half or more say the church should recognize same-sex marriages. So there are a number of ways in which, you know, from the sociology perspective, we observe that Catholics are balancing this tension and even really saying that you can be a good Catholic without obeying church teaching in a number of these fronts. So what it means is that American Catholics in particular are learning to balance that paradox, and in part that's one of the ways that they're bringing social justice, perhaps, to their own lives, to their church, and then that has a trickle-down effect to broader society.
And Zach Johnson, can you react?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think she said most of those numbers were the best, better than I ever could. I would just like to affirm and echo that there's a long tradition going back right from a lot of the roots that are in Vatican II, I think, where Catholics see that they can hold this faith and disagree with church hierarchy and still consider themselves good Catholics.
I've been told that either you're a Catholic or you're not. It is not a buffet. You don't get to take a little bit of this and a little bit of that. It's going to be, you got to take the, got to get the whole thing all at once. And if it's either you're a Catholic or you're not. So Tricia Bruce, is why isn't that real?
There's certainly debate on this. You know, there's the critique that many Catholics are, in fact, cafeteria Catholics, like it's an a la carte menu. You take some and you leave the rest. And, you know, part of this comes from the close association or not with the church. You know, there are some Catholics who are deeply connected to the church and attend weekly, others who are more periphery Catholics who see themselves as Catholics but have a lower level of involvement. But the other thing is that, you know, again, that good Catholic metric, you know, folks are focused on perhaps what they see as the core of the faith, which goes back to issues of the Eucharist, issues of solidarity with the poor, issues of life and social justice. And perhaps it means that one can balance a commitment to those and be a good Catholic and not worry as much about some of these other lesser goods, as it were.
Let's go to our phone line, 210-614-8980. Jackie, hey, Jackie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I guess I was in a lot of the comments about correlating people's involvement in the church and their level of belief. What duty do y'all feel as Catholics to search out why the church teaches what it teaches, like reading Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae and finding out why the church teaches that contraception is not a good for humanity, to be able to come to the truth of the faith? Have you ever thought to seek that wisdom and find out why?
All right, great point, Jackie. Thank you for calling in. So, Zach, she is bringing up the point that the Pope has, you know, really prayed and studied these issues. These did not come about arbitrarily, and there's probably some solid reasoning behind it. And that needs to be, is that part of the discussions and the debates that y'all have at your conference?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely a part of the debate. I think actually Heidi can talk to this more than I can. NCR ran a great series earlier this year at the anniversary of Humanae Vitae. I would just point out that Pope Paul wrote that encyclical right after Vatican II, after the council had, the majority of the members of the council had actually decided in the opposite direction, and he was in the severe minority, but he went that way instead. So he sided with the minority, and that became church doctrine. But Heidi could actually speak a lot more to this than I can.
All right, Heidi?
Sure. So I appreciate Jackie raising that issue, and Sister Elizabeth did as well, this idea of Catholics needing to have an informed conscience. It's not just taking the pulse of what they think or feel about an issue, but many of those Catholics who are answering those survey questions about some of those hot button issues have informed their conscience. They have read the encyclicals, they have read the commentaries about them and some of the debates about them. I think right now in church leadership, we have a pope in Pope Francis who has encouraged people to follow their informed consciences around issues, and who has focused on things like mercy, a church of mercy, and less focus on belief and assent to belief, and a little more focus on the actions, especially social justice and inclusion. He wrote a document on holiness and definitely connected holiness to social justice and action.
Back to the phone lines with Scott. And Scott, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my phone call. First, those who are lapsed Catholics and thinking about returning to the faith, the priest once said, "You can't say any sin in confession that I haven't heard before." So that always makes me feel better. But what I called about is the gay ministry. The Catholic Church has a ministry called Courage. And Courage is for Catholics with same-sex attraction. And it basically teaches that we're valued, loved, complete beings, but we simply can't act upon our same-sex attractions. And so I'm wondering why this group doesn't partner with Courage to set forth with that initiative. It seems like they're competing, and it's just dividing the church.
Scott, thank you for the call. Zach Johnson, I mean, do y'all partner with organizations like that or others?
Yeah, you know, we don't partner with Courage. We partner with other organizations like Dignity and New Ways, and we trust their leadership more because those are folks. Those are organizations that are led by queer Catholics who have felt pushed out by the church and feel like groups like Courage don't see their full selves. They don't see, they don't respect the full, their full self, their full humanity. And so they're saying that there's no reason that we should be leaving half of ourselves outside the church door, even if it is a small part or could be considered a small part. So those are groups who are led by queer Catholics who are saying Dignity, Marianne Duddy Burke from Dignity, Francis DiBernardo from New Ways. Those are queer Catholics who are saying that there's a different way that's actually can accept the full self in communion with Catholicism. You can be both of those things at once.
And you do have LGBTQ participation in the Call to Action conference.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We have a few sessions at this conference on LGBTQ inclusion. Both Dignity and New Ways will be there. Some of the founders of those organizations will be there. So that will be a prevalent topic here at the conference this week.
How does that get squared with this, the traditional Catholic teachings of, you know, no samesies? It's got to be opposite sex only. I mean, Tricia, Bruce, you know, how does this come, you know, how do we make these things come together?
You know, speaking from a sociological perspective, I mean, I think the reality of American Catholics in particular is that there is this clash. And so for many folks who remain deeply active and committed to the Catholic faith, and hearing a particular message about homosexuality or same-sex marriage or otherwise, but who very much are committed to their faith, there's a pain, there's a tension there, and yet they remain, they stay. And, of course, some go. But Call to Action is one of those organizations that creates a space where one can be what might be called a non-assenting Catholic in some ways, and yet still the identity is deeply meaningful. But I think it's also a reality that, you know, ex-Catholics are among the largest denomination in the country, so it's very real that for some that tension with doctrinal views becomes too much to bear.
And Heidi Schlumpf, can you add to that a little bit?
Well, sure. So Courage is a somewhat controversial organization. I know in the past, at least, it has supported conversion therapy for LGBT folks. And so you do have a number of Catholics who would disagree with that approach towards LGBT issues. I just wrote a piece for our newspaper last week that was about sort of the atmosphere that many LGBT Catholics experience in the church, that they feel is not a healthy one, even toxic in terms of current teaching, which while affirms the dignity of LGBT people, also has some pretty strongly worded language like intrinsically disordered that makes LGBT people feel excluded. We've had a rise of anti-gay experiences in the church. We just had a church worker in San Diego who finally left his position because he was being so harassed and threatened with violence. It's been a number of LGBT Catholics find that if they are out about their sexuality, they will lose their jobs, especially at Catholic schools. So this is an issue where, you know, Catholics who are forming their consciences and coming to a different view about this issue than the church currently teaches do find themselves in tension. Now, I will just add that the recent news this summer and fall about sex abuse in the church again has brought the issue of homosexuality kind of front and center. And so because a number of more traditional Catholics who have been opposed to homosexuality all along are using this issue now in the sex abuse conversation.
Okay, we'll talk about that and more other issues, just like helping the poor. You know, how big of a part of that is in the call to action? We can get hung up on all these other issues, but overall, it's like, how does the Catholic Church make the world a better place? 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this.
For 50 years, the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund has been considered the law firm of the Latino community.
We've worked for decades to make sure that Latino kids have equal opportunity to education, for example, regardless of immigration status.
A conversation with MALDEF's Vice President of Litigation, Nina Perales, next time on Fronteras. Download Fronteras wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Catholic social justice. Are you a Catholic? Were you a Catholic? Do you kind of still see yourself as one? How does that inform you as you look to solutions for some of the issues that we have in our lives that we're trying to figure out? Things like whether or not to expand health care, what to do about guns in our society, how do we figure out a way to deal with the caravan coming up from Central America? Are there answers in Catholicism, and are there pathways that will allow you to take action in a way that you feel comfortable with. Well, in San Antonio, we're having a call to action conference. It's going to be, it's November 9th and 11th. They have events tomorrow as coming up here. So they are inviting people to come down and talk about, and this year's theme is Sanctuary, Resistance, and Sacrament. So call in if you've got a question or comment, 210-614-8980. So Sanctuary, Resistance, Sacrament, Zach Johnson, why is that the theme?
Well, you know, when we plan conferences, we always want to have a theme. And this year, those were the three top themes. And we were on a call together. There was a group of us on this call, and we were trying to pick out which one would be the best. And then somebody, of course, finally broke through the either-or mindset and said, they can do a both-and. Why don't we just have all three? When we were planning this conference, this was the end of or middle of 2017, I think. So a lot of the issues that are still alive right now were just sort of gathering steam at that point. The sanctuary movement was starting to get some steam. We were starting to reconnect with people who were part of the sanctuary movement in the 80s. Resistance was the key word for a lot of nonprofits who were trying to be progressive, really not defined what resistance was.
Now resistance is a big word.
Resistance is a huge word, but it's often undefined. So it's often one of those words, you know, it's a hashtag, a part of the resistance. So you can have people who are, you know, crust punk anarchists living in a commune off the grid who consider themselves part of the resistance, and then so is Nancy Pelosi. So, I mean, the resistance doesn't really mean anything. So, and that's part of what this conference is about, is to define those terms.
So, Katrina Varela, you're part of the young cohort of young leaders for the Call to Action. There's a lot of political energy washing over young generation right now. Is resistance, does it mean different, something different in this context than it does in talking about what's happening in the world today?
I think going back to what Zach said, it's a both and. You can be Catholic and be a part of this resistance, like resisting this border wall that's going to cut through my hometown, resisting
white nationalism or other things that are being talked about.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let me go back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980, Brandon. And Brandon, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. So actually, I'm not Catholic, but I was raised very Christian, more, I guess, evangelical. I would just say, I guess, there should be some consideration in the debate between the traditional and the more progressive wing of the church as a whole. It appears that for a lot of other Christian sects in America, they've gone the almost dominionist route. And I guess I'm just curious why the Catholic Church would, I guess, want to kind of close themselves off in a similar fashion, to be more about following rules than about actual reflection on personal spirituality and humanity.
Brandon, thank you for the call. Heidi Schlumpf, national correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter. What do you think about his take?
Yeah, so I'm not 100% sure what Brandon might be referring to, but maybe because some of the hierarchy in the church, the U.S. bishops, have aligned themselves with causes or with individuals in our secular politics that have been more about, kind of the conservative issues of whether we're talking about pro-life and abortion issues or about so-called religious liberty issues. And so the church is viewed by the broader culture as being about rules or being about some conservative political issues. But I think we have to be careful when we use terms like conservative and liberal. They're not super accurate for describing people within the church. So many people are very dedicated, pious Catholics, but have some views that might be considered, you know, quote unquote, progressive or liberal. But that's not the same necessarily as being politically liberal. I think a lot of Catholics are concerned about resistance issues, immigration, racial justice, poverty, and talk about Catholic cafeteria Catholics. You can't have someone who has libertarian economic views and say that they're a Catholic, because then they're sort of picking at the cafeteria as well in terms of some of the church teachings, because the church teaching does not teach a libertarian economic view.
But abortion seems to be non-negotiable, and that may be an item that kind of, it may drive people away from trying identifying as Catholic. Maybe they did it one time, and then now they no longer do. How do you negotiate that, Tricia Bruce?
Well, in fact, if you took the basic principles of Catholic social teaching, which cover issues of life across the board, options for the poor, dignity of workers, stewardship of creation, these don't map neatly into one political party or ideology. So it's true that Catholics on some fronts are polarized, are fragmented, even themselves. You know, we look at the results of the midterm election and we see the Catholic vote nearly evenly split in terms of votes for Democrats and votes for Republicans. So there's not a clear political home, as it were, for Catholics who are negotiating these issues. So they, for themselves, may be having to think, how am I going to let my vote speak my faith? The other big issue in all of this that we haven't touched upon as much is that the church is changing quite a bit in terms of demographics, particularly when it comes to race and ethnicity. So if we look at, for example, the growth of Hispanic Catholics among American Catholics overall, there are pretty different views politically between Hispanic Catholics and white Catholics. So while Catholics overall are relatively split, Hispanic Catholics are more likely to identify with or lean towards the Democratic Party. Hispanic Catholics are more likely to support things like immigration reform, government funding for children's health care, or concern for the poor as a meaningful part of their Catholicism. So I think we have to consider both faith, but also race and ethnicity and changes in demographics moving forward.
Let's go back to the phone lines with Tony. And Tony, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Okay. I wear several hats. With one of them, I'll greet my colleague in sociology of religion, Tricia. This is Tony Blasi. The second hat I wear is a moral theologian, and the primacy of conscience is a long-term traditional Catholic doctrine. And because of consciences being exercised over time, teachings do change. For example, they changed on collecting interest on loans. Third hat is that I'm the editor of a local newspaper for our Pax Christi chapter. Pax Christi is an international Catholic, officially recognized Catholic justice and peace organization. We do mostly advocacy. We have a chapter here in San Antonio, and anybody can Google it, Pax Christi San Antonio, and get in touch with us if they want to participate in our advocacy. Thank you.
All right, Tony, thank you for that. So when we talk about being a Catholic, we're not talking about being a Sunday morning Catholic only going from when you start a Mass until the kickoff for the Dallas Cowboys game. That's when you're a Catholic, and the rest of the week you're not. It's about being a Catholic in your entirety. There is no compartmentalization. It is something that should inform everything about your life. Is that how you see that, Zach Johnson?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Mass, for instance, one of the sacraments, and all the sacraments rather, are particularly Catholic rituals that are, my theologian colleagues may have better answers to this, but to me what that does, that's building a culture. The sacraments are rituals that build a culture.
And a community.
And a community. And a community is built out of that culture. What we've kind of been dancing around on this show here is that there's a lot of Catholic people who consider themselves a part of a culture that is separate from the institution of the church. They still consider themselves a Catholic, and what we've been kind of using the term cafeteria Catholic. I think that's funny. Picking and choosing is sort of, that's universal. Everybody does that. And it's defined by who has control and of the definitions of the different communities. So the institution controls who is and isn't Catholic. And so we pick and choose, but so do they. But these rituals,
But Catholicism has a hierarchy and a doctrine and teachings, and part of the strength and the reason why Catholic Church has existed for so long is because it's been so good at keeping the flock together.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's been good at concentrating power. That's as long as there has been an institutional Catholic Church, there has been a movement, and or many movements. It's come in different iterations of movements of different Catholics who are trying to live a more simple, less hierarchical, less institutional, more gospel-centered, you could say, kind of Catholicism. That's how Francis started, you know, 1,000 years ago. That's the Catholic Worker, where I live in Minneapolis, at the Catholic Worker movement. That's sort of in that same genre.
It's the Dorothy Day.
Dorothy Day, Peter Morin started the Catholic Worker movement. So there's always been this impulse within Catholicism to move away from the institution, from the consolidation of power.
And for what end?
Well, I think that's a good question. I think
to act on their conscience, to not be hemmed in with teachings that were created by someone thousands of miles away who has not been informed by what is happening to them at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's right.
All right, we're going to take a break. The phone calls can continue. If you call in, the number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. A Catholic social justice, what does that mean? How can it inform your faith? The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. If you go down to the Greyhound bus station on St. Mary's Street in downtown San Antonio, I did on Tuesday as I was working on a story, and there was Sister Denise LaRocque again, surrounded by so many people who were recently released from the detention centers in Carnes and Dilley. These are individuals seeking refugee status, asylum in the United States, fleeing death and mayhem in their home countries in Central America. And she is there with other volunteers, motivated by their faith and trying to help these people onto the next leg of their journey, giving them supplies and hope and ministry. This is happening all around us. This is not something that happens on the rare occasion. This is a 24/7 job that many people have taken on to be a arm, to be the hand of God in helping people who are less fortunate. Davy Crockett said, be the poor man's friend. And so that also can apply to a call to action, the largest church reform organization in the United States. If you got a comment, call in 210-614-8980. Zach Johnson, we're seeing the caravan and the fear and all these things are going on with that. How does the Catholic Church, with the call to action, involved with this?
Well, I'll say that this is one of the areas where call to action is closest to the institution. The institutional church, the Bishops' Council, the USCCB in the United States, as far as I know, has been pretty good on this issue. They've said that we need to accept these folks, see them for who they are, see them as humans who are fleeing economic and military oppression in their own country or starvation in their own country, sometimes due to the United States policy. Often due to United States policy. So the bishops, they haven't said that part, but the bishops have been pretty good about saying that this is something that we have a Catholic responsibility to respond to.
Karina, you see this in your own backyard down in the Rio Grande Valley, and you've seen how church leaders are calling for compassion and resisting the border wall, the Catholic diocese on the border. They own land that's actually on the border, on the Rio Grande, and they're saying, we will not allow the border wall to go on our property. So this is something that is, you know, very real to you.
Yes, and even more than that, just like as they're coming across and providing them with a place to sleep, a shower, some medical care. I know Sister Norma Pimentel runs a respite center down in McAllen and has gotten many volunteers and things, and it's just grown over the years, the 2-3 years that she's been.
And so Heidi Schlumpf with the National Correspondent for the National Catholic Worker, where do these people get the crazy idea that they should shelter people who are less fortunate than them and feed the hungry? And where do they get that idea from?
where do they get that crazy idea? Yeah, I think they get it right from the gospel and from Jesus. And they see this, we see this as an essential part of the Christian message and the Christian vocation. I think what's happened, and when you asked Zach earlier about why do people sometimes distance themselves from the institutional part of the church, is that the church hasn't always been as strong an advocate for some of these social justice issues as it could be. And I think we saw a little bit of a decline in the influence and credibility of our leaders. I'm thinking back to the 80s when the bishops were very strong on issues about the economy and nuclear war. And then we kind of had a period of several decades where the bishops were not as credible. They will be meeting as a body next week. I'll be flying straight from San Antonio to Baltimore for the U.S. Bishops meeting. On the top of the agenda is the sex abuse crisis and how to respond to especially allegations against bishops for covering up or for abusing themselves. And I think, once again, this is affecting the bishops' credibility and their ability to speak out on justice issues. They'll also be considering a pastoral statement, a document on racism, that is quite strong in calling racism, both individual actions and systemic racism, a sin. But again, that won't get the headlines because too often it'll be about the issue of sex abuse.
Yeah, a lot of people look at the sex abuse crimes that happened and the horribleness of the cover-up that has happened by the Catholic Church decade after decade, generation after generation, and they see that as the last straw, that they don't want to have anything to do with this organization. And how do you, Zach, how do you bring that all together? I mean, how do you negotiate the fact that here's an organization that failed in this horribleness?
Yeah, I don't blame them. I don't blame people for not wanting to go back. I think this is, once again, there's a way to be Catholic where you don't have to engage with the institution. And that's, I think, why we're seeing a lot of young people who are, I don't know what you'd call them, sort of gray area Catholics who are not going to church but still call themselves Catholic because why would you? Why would you engage with an oppressive institution that is systematically covering up some of the worst abuses you could possibly imagine?
Tricia Bruce, your book, Parish in Place, Making Room for Diversity in the American Catholic Church, looking at long-term viability for the Catholic Church, is this something that is seen as they have got to come to terms with?
Yeah, I think it's an ongoing negotiation. I mean, in fact, my first book was called Faithful Revolution, How Voice of the Faithful is Changing the Church, and that one actually came out of the responses to the 2002 crisis of abuse and an organization, Voice of the Faithful, which has certainly had a number of overlaps with Call to Action in this very quest to look at what does it mean to change our church first before looking elsewhere. And in that case, it was largely what might be called Vatican II Catholics, baby boomers, many of whom were alive during the time of Vatican II, this massive change in the church in the early 60s. And to them, that was an example of how the church can change. Now we see a new crop of Catholics who are, again, having to negotiate with these issues of abuse, revelations of abuse in the church, and I think bringing some new strategies, you know, as we have millennials or exennials coming into the church who look different. Again, demographically, we have massive changes in Catholicism, and I think are also bringing an extra level of accountability from the outside to change the church so that the structures can begin to better reflect the kind of justice messages that the church may preach about in homilies.
Right. So as we talk about cafeteria Catholics going down the line and picking a little bit of this, a little bit of that, there is that serving sample of the crisis and the scandal of the sex abuse. And, you know, how does that fit onto the plate? It can't be ignored, shouldn't be swept aside. It has to be acknowledged. But at the same time, it shouldn't have to be part of what the only thing that it means to be a Catholic. You know, where does all this square together? Back to you, Zach.
Well, I think The biggest question for me is, how would a layperson like myself engage with this issue? There's not really a way to do it. There's not really a lay engagement possibility to talk about with the institutional leaders about this issue. So I think that's the first step of the way forward, and how I make sense of this thing. It's, my first step is to say, can lay people have any voice in how to respond? Right after the Pennsylvania grand jury report dropped, there were witnesses on the steps of cathedrals and basilicas and churches across the country. And the main question that came out that we at Call to Action, as well as in coalition with folks over at Future Church, Quixote Center, other groups, our main question went afterwards that we received from these folks is, what's next? How do we go next? How do we stay engaged? How can we talk to our bishops? No, they don't want to talk to us. How can we talk to our priests? They don't want to talk to us. You know, they don't know what to say to us. So I think that's the first step. How do lay people engage with this at all?
Open dialogue, transparency, accountability.
Well, I think it's structurally, yeah. There's got to be a way on maybe a diocesan level, diocesan review boards, right. I don't know, something like that, where people can functionally insert themselves into this process.
I got a caller on the board. I'm not going to have time to get him on the air. Darby brings up the issue of climate change. And this is something, let's go to Karina, because you're going to have to deal with this more than any of us, because you're the youngest person involved in this conversation. But climate change is real. It's happening now. Do you see how the stewardship of the planet is also part of what it means to be a Catholic?
Yes, of course. I mean, how are we going to continue to live here if we don't take care of it? And it's part of that, the life, protecting life, not just human life, but, I mean, where we're living, because eventually it will affect our lives, and it is affecting our lives and our health and all of these issues.
So there's a lot on the table, Heidi Schlumpf, talking about what needs to be addressed with the call to action. And so where does climate change fit in all that?
Well, of course, we have a pope who thought climate change was such an important issue and the environment that he did an encyclical about it. So I think that Catholics who are discouraged by some of the actions of the hierarchy can find a place in the church around some of these issues, whether it is immigration, which the church has been strong in supporting, whether it is helping the poor, whether it is the environment. So I think a lot of studies show that these are issues that young people care about, and in the end, I think those might be able to be places for hope for the future, where we can connect around these things that we do agree on.
Zach Johnson, Executive Director of Call to Action, do you think right now there is a moral crisis in America and we need the call to action now more than ever?
Yes.
All right. End of show. Thank you, everybody. Go home now. I want to thank all of our guests, Zach Johnson, Executive Director of Call to Action, the largest church reform organization in the United States. Anything you want to add to that? You know, it's just...
No, I think, folks, if you want to show up to the conference, we'll go into that question, what it looks like to actually explore those and plug in on a day-to-day level as Catholics, as people who see that there is a crisis.
Heidi Schlumpf, National Correspondent for the National Catholic Worker. Tricia Bruce is the author of the book Parish in Place, Making Room for Diversity in the American Catholic Church, and she is an Associate Professor of Sociology at UTSA. Karina Varela is a member of the Call to Action 2030 cohort for young leaders. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.